Welcome to the Georgia Today podcast from GPB News. Today is Wednesday, January 8th. I'm Peter Biello. On today's episode, 4 months after a deadly shooting, students and parents at Appalachie High School demand security improvements. Georgians prepare for snow, sleet, and ice. And we'll take a look at the environmental protection efforts of the late former President Jimmy Carter. These stories and more are coming up on this edition of Georgia Today. 4 months after a deadly shooting at Appalachie High School, students and parents there are demanding better security. GPB's Chase McGee reports from a Barrow County School Board meeting last night.
Board members heard from frustrated teachers, students, and parents advocating for policy changes in the wake of September's mass shooting, which killed 2 students and 2 teachers. Multiple students advocated for weapons detection systems powered by artificial intelligence and repeated concerns that a safety plan hadn't been completed by the start of the second semester. Tanya Brown is the parent of a child at Appalachie High School. She says she's frustrated with a lack of transparency from the board.
I would like the district to provide an open forum and implement some kind of weapon detection system immediately. I want you to move and act like you care.
A notice on the school board's website says they will review the results of a safety survey at a second meeting later this month. For GPB News, I'm Chase McGee.
Governor Brian Kemp has unveiled a plan to spend $600 million to restore order in Georgia's prisons. State Department of Corrections officials made a wide-ranging budget request at a meeting of State House and Senate Appropriations Committee members yesterday. Most of the new spending would go towards staffing and pay. But there's also at least $250 million in proposed facility and technology upgrades, including a new state prison. The improvements are aimed at addressing problems the U.S. Department of Justice identified in a scathing report last year. Federal investigators detailed levels of violence and other issues that they found to violate the constitutional rights of incarcerated people. Snow, sleet, and ice are in the forecast for North Georgia on Friday, and regardless of exactly how much and where the wintry mix comes, widespread school and work-from-home plans are expected. State and local officials are most concerned about road safety. GPB's Amanda Andrews has more on preparations.
Leaders from the Georgia and Atlanta Departments of Transportation are urging drivers to stay off the road on Friday. Their crews have begun to salt the roads to prevent ice from forming when rain or snow comes down. Joe Shulman is with GDOT. He says 2014 Snowmageddon that stranded people on roads and highways is on everyone's mind.
We all went through it. Nobody wants to go through anything like that again. So in the time that's passed since then, technology has improved. We've got our resources are better managed. We're ready to go. We've been planning for this.
Overnight temperatures are forecasted to be below freezing through Sunday. For GPB News, I'm Amanda Andrews.
As the world remembers former President Jimmy Carter, who died on December 29th, lovers of Georgia's Ossabaw Island are celebrating his role in saving it from development. In 1978, then-President Carter facilitated the sale of the undeveloped island to the state as a heritage preserve. The late Eleanor Sandy Torrey West was part of the family that sold the island to the state for a fraction of its value. She told GPB in 2000 that without the sale, the island was in danger of becoming an overdeveloped coastal resort not far from Savannah.
Then Jimmy Carter came along, and he sat on the floor at my feet when I was sitting in the picture window there and said, "Now, what do you think Ossabaw should be?" So I said, "Come and take a walk with me." So we walked all the way down to Cabbage Garden and back. And I said, "Ossabaw is a miracle. It's not only ecological miracle, but it's powerful and it's just beyond price. I mean, it just simply cannot be ruined." And he thoroughly agreed.
Carter campaigned as recently as 5 years ago when state lawmakers proposed a bill that would have opened up state heritage preserves to private development. Ossabaw Island today remains only accessible by boat and only for scientific, educational, and cultural uses. It's managed by the Georgia Department of Natural Resources and the Ossabaw Island Foundation. Former President Carter was known as one of the most conservation-minded presidents. Carter biographer Jonathan Alter says his environmental ethic left a lasting legacy.
He doubled the size of the National Park Service, one of his many underappreciated accomplishments. With the Alaska Lands Bill, and many other things that he did environmentally. And then, of course, you know, the first fuel economy standards, the first toxic waste cleanup, the first funding for green energy. The list goes on and on and on of what he did for the environment when he was president.
Carter is being remembered as a protector of rivers. As Georgia governor, he canoed down the Chattooga River in northeast Georgia and was instrumental in its designation as a wild and scenic river. Buzz Williams is a former executive director of the Chattooga Conservancy and was active in the river's conservation when it was protected as wild and scenic in 1974.
And they took Jimmy Carter down the river, put him in a canoe, and of course he immediately, like everybody, fell in love with the Chattooga and came back the next year and ran it in a kayak.
In fact, Carter was part of the first team ever to go down the river's challenging Bull Sluice Rapid in an open canoe. Carter also canoed and protected the Flint River in southwest Georgia. GPB's Grant Blankenship has that story.
A little west of Thomaston is a place called Sproul Bluff. Face the water, and hiking trails lace the hill behind you, rising from the beach. In front of you, past shoals and a boulder people jump from in the summer, jutting 500 feet out of the water, is the Sproul Bluff. West from the bluff, you'll find rare old-growth longleaf pine forest. A little north, that blends with plants you'd find in the Appalachian Highlands, like mountain laurel. Sproul Bluff Park Coordinator Sarah Williams works in the camp store back up the hill. Williams loves this place as much as visitors, although she says they aren't always sure what they're seeing.
You know, we have people even call this a lake down here. We're like, no, it's a river, you know. So, yeah.
The Flint River. And believe it or not, at one time, Sproul Bluff came very close to being the bottom end of a lake, if not for Jimmy Carter. Janet Morgan Maple remembers being excited about the idea of a new lake when she was a child.
I'm thinking water skiing. I think I had just learned to water ski and how nice it was when I'd go to lake, you know. And I wasn't a part of Dad's business, a part of the agriculture or whatever, but I was a part of hearing him so concerned.
Tom Morgan was Maple's dad. And in the 1970s, when Maple was in the eighth grade, her dad was a farmer and ran a fertilizer business in the town of Woodbury. Maple says her dad was concerned because he loved, maybe even lived for, the trips down the Flint River that started right out their back door.
We would just slide the canoe down.
Like otters down the riverbank. And off they'd go, past Pine Mountain, Dripping Rock, Paisley Shoals.
You've got the spider lilies down the way. You've got mussels. You've got the river shell bass.
Up on the bluff, there are endangered red-cockaded woodpeckers and Bachman sparrows. There are coral snakes. But back in the 1970s, politically powerful entities, including the ironically named U.S. House member Jack Flint, wanted the dam. Tom Morgan would tell anyone who would listen to oppose the project of the Army Corps of Engineers that would have drowned the lilies, the shoals, and would have left a lake lapping at his door.
If he was going to give a speech, he would practice at home, and I would hear him.
The allies he won often shared traditions of farming and outdoor life, and luckily for them, one of their own was in the governor's mansion.
A lot of other outdoor people were involved in even getting Jimmy Carter to get on the river and go down it and just see, before you make any decision, see what you are going to be destroying.
That's what Governor Jimmy Carter did. I personally canoed down the river twice, Carter writes, in the preface to a 2001 book by Fred Brown and Sherry Smith called A Recreational Guide to the Flint River. And Carter was really taken by the beauty he saw. The wildlife that exists in that river corridor, he wrote. Otter, fox, muskrat, beaver, bobcat. You cannot describe it. On the other hand, Governor Carter was a businessman who had a responsibility to consider the economic impact a new lake might make. Martin Doyle is a professor of environmental science and public policy at Duke University and an expert in U.S. water policy. He says this is where another more fundamental side of Carter came into play.
You know, Carter was an engineer. I think he was a nuclear engineer from Annapolis.
In the U.S. Navy. And so Carter, the engineer.
The way that he seems to make sense of it is I got to go and look at these numbers myself.
By numbers, he means the cash benefits the Army Corps of Engineers said would flow into communities around Sproul Bluff after the dam was done.
And Carter kind of dug into them and he said, well, number one, I think that they're overestimating the benefits.
Carter was far more blunt. He called the Corps of Engineers' economic projections, quote, a complete passel of lies. So Governor Carter vetoed the Sproul Bluff Dam. He ended it. Later, President Carter remained convinced he'd found a pattern of overpromising around federal dam projects. He would veto projects across the country.
And that pivot in particular sets the dam building industry back on its heels.
Some got built anyway, but Martin Doyle says before he left office, Carter left behind some of his way of thinking about dams and how they should be built. And it had to do with who was paying.
If the federal government was paying for 100% of the cost, there's no reason for a congressional representative or a senator or the local community to not want a project.
Or as Carter wrote, one of a congressman's goals in life was to have built in his district a notable dam at federal government expense that created a lake that could be named for him. For Carter, this was the very definition of pork barrel politics.
And what Carter started was what was called a local sponsorship, that the local benefiting community had to put up about 25% of the costs of a dam.
And once the people in town, like at the Chamber of Commerce or in the grocery store, were told to dig into what felt like their pockets for millions of dollars, they'd have to ask themselves, how much do I really want to water ski?
Exactly. Right. And do you value it that much?
It was a fiscally conservative move.
In this way, he was Reagan before Reagan was Reagan.
Under President Ronald Reagan, the mandated local buy-in for a federal dam would ramp up to 50% of the price tag. Doyle says that, plus a general lack of easy places to dam, meant half as many new projects in the decade after Carter left Washington. Jimmy Carter apparently never quit caring for the Flint River. As recently as 2008, Georgia politicians again floated the idea of a Sproul Bluff Dam, this time to satisfy a thirsty Atlanta. Carter, by then a Nobel Peace laureate, spoke for the river again, and the idea faded away. Lakes and dams are everywhere, Carter said in the preface to that 2001 guidebook. But to experience something that is undisturbed and has its natural beauty, he asked, you hope and pray that it will be there 1,000 years in the future, still just as beautiful and undisturbed. For GPB News, I'm Grant Blankenship in Upson County.
And that's a wrap on this edition of Georgia Today. Thank you so much for tuning in. Remember, you can always find the latest updates on our news stories at gpb.org/news. And remember to subscribe to this podcast. We'll be back in your podcast feed tomorrow afternoon with all the latest news, and you won't want to miss it. Subscribe, and we will pop up automatically in your feed. And if you've got feedback, send an email to us. Our address is georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Peter Biello. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.